Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of America's racist grandpa to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is inconsistent comparison, also known as faulty or unfair comparison.
Yeah, so this fallacy is based on when you compare two things, just being fair about it, really. The unfair comparison is probably quite a good term for it. And the way that you can make sure you're fair is by being consistent about what you're comparing. Because if you're looking at two different things and trying to draw an analogy between them or trying to make a point about the two things and the connection between them, if you're looking at different aspects of them and comparing that, then you're not making the point. You're not actually making a good argument. Yep. So
would it be fair to call it apples and oranges?
Actually, apples and oranges is sometimes used as an alternative title for this fallacy.
Right.
So, yeah, that's perfect. And so an example from Trump is at the World Economic Forum in Davos, where he said this.
I pledged to eliminate two unnecessary regulations for every one new regulation. We have succeeded beyond our highest expectations. Instead of two for one, we have cut 22 burdensome regulations for every one new rule.
That was a kind of campaign pledge of Trump's, was to get rid of regulations, to remove two old regulations every time they made a new rule.
Mm-hmm.
And he's claiming there that every time they've made a new rule, they've got rid of 22, which is quite a significant difference. And this claim is based on a press release from the White House from December, which says that since Trump issued the executive order 13771, the two-for-one rule, that federal agencies have issued 67 deregulatory actions and imposed only three new regulatory ones. So they've only made three new rules and they've got rid of 67 rules. So that seems to back up what he says. But the thing is, they're not actually classing the regulatory actions and the deregulatory actions the same. They are using different rules to say what is a new rule and what is a rule we got rid of. So there's a memorandum from the Office of Management and Budget which defines regulatory actions and deregulatory actions to help agencies comply with the two-for-one rule, basically.
Okay, yeah.
So it says that a regulatory action, a new rule basically, says a significant regulatory action is defined in Section 3F of Executive Order 12866, while deregulatory actions are not limited to those defined as significant under Executive Order 12866. So it specifically says in this memorandum, we are not treating these the same. We're not saying that the rules that you come up with are not the same as the rules that we get rid of.
So you can just get rid of any old thing. It doesn't have to have the same significance as the one that you're introducing.
Yeah, basically, it means that when you're counting up regulations that you've got rid of, you count everything.
Yeah.
So even there's rules about the changing the timetables for drawbridge opening. if you get rid of that rule, that counts.
Right. I've suddenly got this image of how many castles are there in America that have got drawbridges?
Yeah, drawbridge, I think we're thinking, you would think because you're British, drawbridge castle. But no, this would be for bridges which boats go through.
Fair enough.
So they lift up the bridges. So, you have to have a timetable for that.
Oh, yeah.
For when the boats can go through and when cars can go over the bridge. So if you make a rule about what you can do with a timetable, how you have to publish the timetable, things like that.
Right.
If you take away that rule, that counts.
Okay.
However, when you're counting new rules, you only count really significant ones. Ones, according to this executive order, that have a greater than $100 million annual impact on the economy, ones that interfere with multiple government agencies, or ones that raise new legal issues. So that's quite a significantly different criteria.
Yeah.
So yeah, you couldn't introduce a drawbridge rule that would impact the economy to $100 million, could you?
Probably not, no.
No.
The thing is, if you actually look at the rules the same, if you treat them the same, the change isn't so significant between how many they get rid of and how many new rules they make. PolitiFact looked at it and found that actually only 5 deregulatory actions were significant under the same rules. So only 5 of the rules they got rid of had that much impact on the economy or interfered with multiple government agencies compared to the 3 new ones that they imposed. So actually they didn't meet their criteria of 2-for-1, essentially.
Right.
They created 3 new rules and got rid of 5.
Mm.
PolitiFact can be, I think it's quite neutral, but it's probably leans slightly to the left. If you look at a right-leaning advocacy group, the American Action Forum, they looked at only regulations with any economic impact. So they ignored the other elements. And they found that, and this was not the $100 million impact. This was any economic impact at all.
Okay.
They found that there were, based on that, there were 5 new rules, because obviously it's a slightly wider criteria, but there were only 9 rules got rid of. So that still doesn't actually fit the 1-to-2, not quite.
No.
So when you don't compare things fairly, when you don't use the same criteria for both things that you're comparing, you're not offering good evidence. You're not making a good argument to support your claim. What you're doing is using a logical fallacy. And in this case, it's the fallacy of inconsistent comparison.
Yeah. So it requires a certain amount of fact checking to dig that stuff out, and you kind of rely on the people that are telling you these things to be telling you the truth, of just suddenly realizing the daftness of that statement, because you know they couldn't look at who they are.
Yeah. But it's only because of the world that we live in now that where fact checking is such an important part of the political discourse.
Yeah.
In the old days, sometimes, you know, yes, politicians lie and you couldn't necessarily guarantee it, but you wouldn't necessarily have gone, oh, we should check that.
Yeah.
We should see what basis they're making that statement on. These days, you've got PolitiFact, you've got the Washington Post fact-checking, you've got all kinds of organizations that look into that kind of thing. And frankly, it makes it harder for them to get away with it in the sense that no one will notice, but they still get away with it in the sense that their base doesn't care.
Yeah.
So they still get to say this stuff.
Yes, exactly. I was going to be a bit more charitable and say they can, in the heat of the moment, and I was also thinking we should caveat somewhat this notion that in the old days, people would tell the truth, because in the old days, Soviet Russia existed when they would publish the five-year plan and say, we are beating our planned roster for wheat supplies or whatever.
Yeah, it's probably fairer to say that there wasn't this culture of scrutinizing their words much more carefully, and you have the ability to go in and check this stuff.
Yeah. I think in the past, the West, well, in my experience of my experience of politics in the past was when I was a lot younger. And so it just felt like that actually they used the excuse of the enemies, the other side of the Iron Curtain, was saying, well, we don't lie like they are obviously lying. You know, you can take it from us that, you know, we are at the, as Harold Wilson said, you know, we're at the white heat of technology is helping us all out. And Harold Macmillan said, you've never had it so good. And
well, you're really dating yourself.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just thinking that actually they were lies just as much as this stuff. And even who was the guy that said, I have here in my hand a piece of paper,
Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, that promises peace in our time. You know, none of it was true.
If you're kind of making that argument that actually the lies have always been around, it's just that we're better at spotting them now, that I think is true, but there's a danger that abdicates responsibility for checking Trump or suggests that Trump is normal in some way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was just announced actually today, I think, that... in his first year according to the Washington Post fact checkers, they said in his first year he made over 2,000 false or misleading statements. He's actually almost doubled that now in the next 6 months. He's done another 2,000.
Wow.
In just 6 months. He's kind of ramping up his bullshit at a quite alarming rate.
Yeah. Actually.
Again, to be fair to him, most politicians didn't say as much publicly in days gone by.
You know,
he can make statements on the internet. He can tweet, obviously, all the time. That you know, he's done something. I think last weekend he sent about 40 tweets.
Wow.
So that gives plenty of opportunity to talk nonsense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's saying a lot more, I think, than certainly if you go back 20 years, politicians used to. So there's more opportunity for him to lie.
Yeah.
But I do think that the proportion of stuff he says that isn't true is unusually high.
Yeah. So much for draining the swamp.
Yeah. Hard to drain the swamp when you are the swamp.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought Boris back in because we miss him so. Anyway, so this week's example is early on in the campaign for Leave, before the Brexit referendum. Boris Johnson jumped on the bandwagon and became the spokesperson for the Leave campaign. And there was a double-decker bus that had a big slogan on the side, which said, "We send £350 million per week to the EU. Why don't we spend it on the NHS instead?" And this clip is from the launch of the battle bus.
"And if we vote Leave on June the 23rd, we can take back control of £350 million a week and spend on our priorities here in this country, including on the National Health Service."
So there's all sorts of fallacies going on in there. So the inconsistent comparison is the £350 million a week. So the fact-checking site over here, which is, I guess, the equivalent of the Washington Post, one of them is run by the BBC, and it talks about exactly that. And it says the UK doesn't send £300 million a week to Brussels because there's a rebate because of the size of the country that we are and the contributions that we make to the European Union in ways other than just pure cash, which was renegotiated by Margaret Thatcher in the 80s, which is where the continuing Euroscepticism within her party was somewhat assuaged at the time. So we have there's a rebate which is sent back to the UK. So in fact, it's deducted before we send the money. So that deduction would take that weekly contribution down to 276 million. But that figure includes 88 million that we spend on stuff in the UK itself, like support for farmers, regional aid. There's another 27 million a week that goes to support things like research projects in UK universities and UK companies. So that leaves us with 161 million. But even that includes the international development funding, because our government has a pledge to spend at least 0.7% of its gross national product on international development. So that comes out of that contribution as well. So the next inconsistent comparison is, okay, well, how do we divert that 161 billion to the NHS? Well, we'd have to see what deal we ended up with after we left the European Union. Can we have a relationship with the European Union like Norway or Switzerland? So they aren't necessarily ruled by all of the regulations in place from the EU, but they still pay into the EU. And the contribution for the Norway model, the BBC site comes up and says, okay, well, in 2011... where the figures are available, the Norway's contribution to the EU was £106 per head, compared with our contribution of £128 per head. So even if we were out of the EU and in a different relationship like Norway, we would only save what's that? £22 a head. So that the total of that is about 1.2 billion a year, not which isn't 350 million a week.
So yeah, I mean Boris is comparing the money that he's claiming we give to the EU, obviously ignoring lots of other things.
Yeah.
But even if he was right about that, even if he was right that the 350 million goes directly from us to the EU and we don't get anything back, by suggesting we could just use that for the NHS, we could spend that however we want. He's comparing money that goes out in one budget for one purpose with money that is used for another thing. That's not how budgets work.
No.
That's not how government works.
No.
You can't just take money and go, oh, we're not using that anymore. Let's put it into this budget.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated than that. And suggesting that we can just make that decision, we can just spend it on the NHS.
Yeah, but well, particularly we know that some of that money that goes to the EU is being spent in the UK on farmers.
Yeah, so we would be taking away, even if they did that, they're taking away money from one budget that we're currently using it for, from like you say, for development or for farmers. So yeah, it's suggesting that money just immediately comes back to us and we get to use it for whatever we want.
Yeah, and in fact, the chairman of the UK Statistics Authority, Andrew Dilnot, wrote a letter to the government saying, I conclude that there is a lack of clarity in the way the official statistics have been drawn on in the statements I've considered. In particular, I note the use of the £350 million figure, which appears to be a gross figure, which doesn't take into account the rebate or other flows from the EU to the UK public sector, that alongside the suggestion that this could be spent elsewhere. Without further explanation, I consider these statements to be potentially misleading. Given the high level of public interest in this debate, it is important that official statistics are used accurately, with important limitations or caveats clearly explained. So that's the
a British complaint. That,
yes, there's the guy who's in charge of statistics as government body set up to look after statistics on the behalf of the government, who then points out to the government, you've been using these statistics quite in a cavalier fashion, and I recall at the time that he was hauled over the coals for it. He was, you know, literally almost became an enemy of the people for pointing out the truth of the matter, you know.
I like that the guy in charge of statistics for the UK is particularly keen that official statistics are used accurately because of the high level of public interest. Like, if people didn't really care, just do what you want with statistics.
Like. Yeah, yeah.
But since people are concerned about this, we should be careful.
We should be careful what we say. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just in case, you know, and we should explain the caveats that we're using. But, you know, he hasn't really kind of grasped the notion of what a soundbite is. You know, that it's just got to sound good. It's got to be, you know, Boris saying, yeah, let's take back control and all that kind of stuff. So, but what is interesting is that despite the fact that there was almost universal condemnation, despite all that, on the 17th of June this year, Theresa May revived the self-same fallacy. Like some kind of populist zombies shuffling through the public gaze to divert attention from close-run votes over Brexit negotiations in Parliament. And she said, at the moment, as a member of the European Union, every year we spend significant amounts of money on our subscription, if you like, to the EU. She's talking to Andrew Marr again, who we met last week. And she said, when we leave, we won't be doing that. It's right that we use the money to spend on our priorities, and the NHS is our number one priority. It's one of those...
I'm very disappointed you didn't do her voice, by the way.
I can't do the quavering thing. We can auto-tune it. That'd be fine.
Okay.
Why did she do that? Well, we know why she did it, because it's a populist thing and people go, yeah, we've forgotten about that. Yeah, bring back the bus. We believe you.
Thing is, immediately they won the Brexit vote. Didn't people say, so are you going to give the 350 million to the NHS now? And they basically went, oh, yeah, we didn't say we were going to do that. We just said we could.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for Nigel Farage, who was then the leader of the UK Independence Party, and self-styled Prince of Brexit, was interviewed. He said, so about this 350 million, he said, no, we can't do that. And I'm sorry, and I'm sorry that we promised that.
Basically, immediately after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like they didn't have to think about it. They just went, oh, yeah, we were just, that was just something we said.
Yeah. So actually, the basis upon which the Leave campaign was conducted was on this big fat lie. And you kind of.
Well, they never expected to win. That's the thing.
No.
They didn't think it was going to be called on it. Because
which is almost the same, premise as Trump's presidency, isn't it? You know, if you think he was never supposed to win, it all makes perfect sense.
Well, that was fucking weird.
It's Animal out of the Muppets.
I recognise the character. I just don't know what he's doing in the sting.
Well, okay. He's a wild kind of guy. Yeah. He knows all about fallacies in the wild.
Right then. Well, in the fallacy in the wild, yeah. We talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political point of view. And this week we have actually an advert from a UK budget supermarket. I think actually they have them in the US as well. It's Aldi. And I'm going to play the end of the TV ad. It's not very descriptive, but I'll explain what's going on. And the beginning of the ad is a dad kind of helping his little daughter to learn to ride her bike. Mm-hmm. And she goes off and then does various bike tricks, which are pretty amazing.
Right.
So it ends like this.
That was amazing.
I know. We saved 35% shopping at Aldi this week.
Now that is amazing.
Be a sport. Take the challenge. See how much you could save.
So when the mum mentions how much they've saved shopping at Aldi, mm-hmm. there's a kind of a 4-second flash up on the screen showing a kind of shopping basket of goods that have been bought in Aldi. And it says, Aldi, £33.04. And on the other side of the screen is a comparable shopping basket, the same goods, basically. Right. And it says, big four supermarkets, £53.35. So that's quite a significant saving.
Yeah.
£20 difference.
Yeah.
The thing that you don't necessarily spot in the 4 seconds that's up on screen is that the Aldi stuff is all own brand.
Right.
And the stuff from the big four supermarkets is all kind of premium brands.
Right.
Like Kellogg's, Heinz, PG Tips, Finnish dishwasher tablets instead of just Aldi dishwasher tablets. So what Aldi are doing here is not comparing own brand, their own brand, with the other supermarket's own brands, the Tesco's own brand and so on, but with the most expensive things you can buy. So you're not saving by going to Aldi. You're saving by not buying the premium brands.
Yeah. But even the comparison with other supermarkets' own brands is probably an inconsistent comparison because they're not the same brands. You know,
I think it would be fair if you were saying, like, for example, there was a print ad as well, which specifically called out Morrisons, which is one of the big four supermarkets in the UK. And they had a basket of products that it said Aldi £11.42, Morrisons £18.19. And again, it's not comparing Morrisons own.
Oh, okay.
If it had Morrisons own brand goods and they were like £13 or something, and then Aldi is £11.42, it's not as impressive,
but
it's a fair comparison. You're saying, look, if you buy, you can buy the same stuff. It's our version of it. You know, everyone knows the own brand stuff probably isn't as high quality as the premium brand stuff. But really, for the most part, the own brand stuff of each of the individual supermarkets is probably quite similar. And if the price is significantly lower in Aldi, fair enough.
Yeah.
But they're not saying that. They're implying it.
And
in this instance, they aren't comparing fairly. They aren't doing the same thing. And actually, Morrison's complained about this, and it was upheld by the Advertising Standards Authority as unfair, essentially, because they said that there was a Morrison's or other competitor supermarket-owned brand product for each branded product shown, and as such, each own brand product was qualitatively equivalent to the branded product in Aldi, the Aldi branded product.
Yeah.
Whereas the kind of premium brand wasn't the same.
And was so the because Morrison's is a fairly, well, before Aldi, I think Morrison's was probably the cheapest own brand supermarket on the high street. As a it was from north of England.
I mean, Morrison's, for American listeners, Morrison's owns in the UK owns Safeways. Safeways used to be a supermarket in the UK. I know you've got Safeways in the US, and Morrison's was actually a reasonably small northern supermarket chain, and they bought all of the UK Safeways and turned them into Morrison's a few years ago. So basically, we've got Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Asda, and Morrison's. Those are the main ones, and they're fairly comparable. But yeah, I would say that Morrison's is one of the, certainly on the cheaper end of those four.
Yeah.
But the budget ones, the real budget ones, Aldi and Lidl now, they've kind of come up and tried to take away some of that market, and they've been quite successful. But using these tactics is not fair.
Yeah.
They've been told not to do it, and they've said they won't do it.
Good. The power of logical fallacy thinking at the Advertising Standards Authority wins out again. Championing absolutely. The consumer's rights.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news. Now, Mark isn't doing particularly well at this game so far.
So I'm lulling you into a false sense of security, you see.
Yeah, this is it. I've got a feeling. I've got a good feeling about this week. This is your week.
This is my Paul Newman hustler thing, you see. I'll get you in, and then I'll get you to eat 100 boiled eggs. Oh, no, that's a different film.
You're confusing your Paul Newman films.
I am, yeah. So,
I can't let you get away with that.
No, my tactic last week, which I kind of hit upon, was to deliberately try and choose the wrong one in the hope that this week, doing that, it might succeed and I might actually pick the wrong one. I mean, pick the one that you made up.
I think it's worth a go.
Yeah.
It's certainly, anything is worth a go because what you've been doing so far isn't working.
It's not working at all. But it's interesting. And what happens, I see what I'm doing is providing I am the fall guy. So other people, when they're listening to this, they will feel that much more smug and self-satisfied that they can spot it.
If they can get it, then they will feel better about themselves, knowing that they've beaten you. Yeah. So that's very
Knowing how much we've spent hours and hours studying all this stuff, and they could just get it straight away. It's a bit like watching Jeopardy on the TV, where you just shout at the TV, you can get all the right answers.
Is what people don't realise is how much pressure you're under. They just think it's easy sitting at home listening and guessing the right answer, but they don't realize
we're here under
the studio lights
exactly, under the hot lamp, and I've got a floor manager pointing at me and pointing at a watch, and doing all those kind of signals to kind of wrap it up, and
it's very stressful.
We've got fact checkers listening to our every word, lawyers tapping us on the shoulder, one tapping me on the shoulder right now because I shouldn't have mentioned the lawyers. So it's immense pressure.
So I think people should go easier on
you.
So there's a theme this week.
Okay.
I've noticed that Trump doesn't seem to know when things happened in history much.
Right.
Or how long ago things happened.
Okay.
So the theme this week is things that Trump got wrong in terms of how long ago they happened, which is...
Oh, okay.
There should be a snappier. I need a snappier title for the theme.
Yeah.
I don't have one. So we have three Trump quotes. You're looking for the one that I made up.
Okay.
Is it number one? Mm-hmm. I'm very pro-Israel. When I decided to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, it was time. It should have been done years ago. The state of Israel has had Jerusalem as their capital for over 100 years. Is it number two? For the past 17 years, Obamacare has wreaked havoc on the lives of innocent, hardworking Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Or number three, we met with the Queen, who is absolutely a terrific person, where she reviewed her honour guard for the first time in 70 years, they tell me.
Mm. It doesn't get out much, does he? That's the thing. Number three, I know is real, because at the time that he met with the Queen, I was deliberately looking out for what he would say to make something up about. So I think that one's real. I'm very pro-Israel. When I decided to recognise Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, God, just have to take all the credit, doesn't he? Should have been done years ago. State of Israel, I've had Jerusalem as their capital for 100 years. Well, no, they haven't. For the past 17 years, Obamacare has wreaked havoc on the... Okay, that's good. I think that... that's because that made me laugh. I think number two, you wrote. So I think the pro-Israel 100-year capital thing is real. I think the 17 years one, he's not even going to kind of lump Medicare in with Obamacare and get that wrong. I think you made that one up.
Okay.
I hope you did, because it's very funny.
You're most confident about number three, so let's go in reverse order.
Okay.
He met with the Queen. He did do that. That's true.
Yay! Right.
And number three is real.
We met with the Queen, who is absolutely a terrific person, where she reviewed her honor guard for the first time in 70 years, they tell me.
So she does it every day, doesn't she?
The Queen has only been Queen for 66 years.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And she reviews, she inspects the Guard of Honour on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's a very common thing that she does with visiting dignitaries.
Yeah.
She did it with Obama in 2011.
Does it on her birthday, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I don't know where on earth he got that idea.
No. I think
the last time she did it was 4 years before she was Queen.
Yeah, which maybe she went as a child with her dad, you know, the king. Because I think there is when she's expecting the guard, there's a photoshopped, you know, or an early, not photoshopped, it would have been a cut and paste job of the Queen sitting on a horse in all the regalia, and somebody's put Mickey Mouse's head on her.
Okay.
Google it, people. It does exist. And that was from the 60s. So, it was all that Mickey Mouse, Richard Nixon type thing. Yeah. So I know she's done it once at least.
Yes.
Dressed as Mickey
Mouse.
She's
done it many times.
Yeah.
It's a common thing for
her.
Yeah.
Speak, so.
So you think number one.
I think it's real.
And number one is fake news.
Oh, man, that's very good indeed. Very good. What I should do is count the number of sentences, because that's very good.
He did not claim that the State of Israel has had Jerusalem as their capital for 100 years. Of course, the State of Israel has only existed since 1948.
Yeah.
So that would be possible.
No,
but
so
that doesn't preclude him saying things.
No, that's true. So
because what that does mean is that number two, is real.
So what?
For the past 17 years, Obamacare has wreaked havoc on the lives of innocent, hardworking Americans.
It's not like you haven't been immediately in office straight after Obama, who introduced Obamacare for maybe a year before you got into office. And what the hell? And you campaigned on stamping it out because it was a communist conspiracy in 2016.
Yeah, it's really not clear what he was talking about.
No.
It's obviously not 17 years.
So that's the horrifying thing about the fact that one is fake, is that two is true. Because
yes.
For the past 17 years, since 2001, before Obama was even a senator, Obamacare has been running. And it's wreaked havoc on the... What the hell? Who did you elect, you stupid people? What on earth? Yeah. Oh, I don't mind losing for that one. Don't mind losing. Because that is just...
Well, that's good, because you have lost, which means I win again. That means that I'm undefeated still.
Yeah.
At fake news.
6-0. Half a dozen.
So, podcast listeners, I need your help because this is getting ridiculous.
And
if you think you can make up a convincing fake Trump quote, then share this episode on Twitter, include your quote and the hashtag Fallacious Trump, and I'll pick the best one and you'll be podcast famous. So it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called Collusion is Not a Logical Fallacy. This is the part of the show where we want to talk about all the crazy stuff that's going on in the White House and in the Trump administration, but we can't talk about all of it because there's just so much crazy stuff. So we have to pick one story. And the story that we have picked this week to talk about is Rudy Giuliani going on TV again and just changing the story. It's amazing what he does for the president. He causes, I think, as many problems as he, in inverted commas, solves.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there's any kind of real plan.
No. I like to think of him as the deck chair attendant on the Titanic. He moves them around, and he orders it.
It's like that kind of the three card Monty. It's like it's just kind of keep everything moving.
Mm.
And no one will be able to pick.
Yep. Nobody knows where it lands. Yeah. Which ones? Yeah. Pick the lady. Find the lady. Yeah. 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 Find the collusion. Yes.
Yeah. So with collusion, he has been saying for a while now, as has Trump, that there was no collusion. Every opportunity they get, they mention that there's no collusion. Trump has tweeted that there's no collusion at least 90 times since last March. And this week, Giuliani continued with that. He didn't deviate, but he did mention that just in case there was collusion,
right?
Collusion isn't a crime anyway, so it's fine.
right.
But there wasn't any. But if there was,
yeah,
it wasn't a crime.
It's not a crime. Collusion in itself, just colluding, isn't a crime. Okay,
that's true.
But there wasn't any.
That is true. Collusion. The word collusion.
Yeah.
Isn't a crime,
right?
So, and that's the brilliant thing about this is that by saying collusion so much, by every time it's come up saying there was no collusion, and I this may be a good strategy. I don't know if this has been intentional. It's right. Possible. They have turned the narrative into was there collusion or not, because that's the thing they've been denying. So that kind of makes people think, well, that's what Mueller's trying to prove is collusion. It's not what he's trying to prove. But if it was, they've done a good job of saying again and again that there was no collusion.
And
they're right, that collusion, there isn't in the federal code,
right.
There isn't a law against collusion. It mentions collusion a couple of times in kind of the antitrust statutes, which are about price fixing and things like that.
Yeah.
But in terms of political collusion, there isn't anything in there. If the special counsel's job was to look for collusion, that would be a really good argument.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not. Rosenstein's letter authorizing the special counsel says that he is supposed to look for any links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald Trump, any matters that arise directly from the investigation, and any other matters within the scope of the U.S. code. And if the special counsel believes it's necessary and appropriate, he's authorized to prosecute federal crimes arising from the investigations of these matters.
Right.
So
no collusion.
He's not
at all.
Looking for collusion. He's looking for crimes in general.
Yeah.
And there are loads of crimes. There are laws against election fraud, computer hacking, wire fraud, falsifying records, obstruction of justice, all kinds of things. the fact that there isn't a law against collusion specifically is irrelevant to whether there's anyone has done anything wrong or anyone is going to end up in prison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So actually what he's doing is constructing a straw man, isn't he?
In a way,
because
yes.
he's just saying all of this stuff that's going on is all concentrating on collusion and, well, A, there was no collusion, and B, it isn't illegal. Colluding is not a crime. So it's going to be like another Trump when he mentioned a report and he said, you'll find in the report that it upholds the fact that there was no collusion. And I think, well, the report wasn't about that at all, so it wouldn't include that in there.
Yeah, you're talking about the Inspector General's report into Hillary's email scam.
Yeah, if it was a magazine that was about how to grow zucchini, then sure, that doesn't have any paragraph in there about collusion. They could find no collusion at all in that magazine about growing zucchini. So, you know, he's completely exonerated when it comes to colluding with zucchinis. And he just throws it into the conversation.
Yeah, he said that he's been saying it since the beginning, which I don't think is entirely true.
No.
He says it's a very, very familiar lawyer's argument. My client didn't do it, and even if he did it, it's not a crime.
Yeah.
It is just contradicting yourself within the same sentence, isn't it? Basically.
Yeah.
It's saying, no, he definitely didn't do it. But if he did do it,
then what he did do isn't the crime anyway. Yeah. And what?
Oh. And Trump totally backed him up on Twitter with this.
Well, so, yeah.
Collusion isn't a crime, but it doesn't matter because I didn't collude. Basically, so I don't know what the actual tweet was, but it was very similar to that. But he's been pushing collusion onto the Democrats. He's been saying there was no collusion. And then probably about 30% of the time he says there's no collusion. He puts in brackets after, except with Hillary and the Russians.
Right. Right.
And so he's been pushing collusion onto them. And now he's saying collusion isn't a crime. That's fine.
That's it. They could just turn around and go, well, that's fine. Yeah, we did all of it, but you know, you can't get us for any of it. Yeah, yeah. Well, it is interesting because I read an article in Computer Weekly which states that there was a British hacker that set up a kind of smoke screen to try and divert the fact that the manipulation of the election was done by the Russians. So he made it look like it wasn't done by the Russians and it was done by some American hacktivists. And there's no breadcrumb trail yet back to the White House from that story. But it seemed clear that there was something going on sufficient that they needed to set something up to make it look like it wasn't the Russians.
Yeah. The thing is, there was no one asking who it was for him to stand up and say, I'm Spartacus, too. The people who were looking weren't looking in his direction.
Yes.
They were looking at the Russians.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was the Russians.
Yeah, yes, yes, exactly.
That's why they've indicted several Russians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're so bad at crime, aren't they? They're so bad covering up stuff and making it look innocent or anything like that.
Yeah.
They're really bad at it.
Yeah.
If they were better, they would have found a patsy by now to claim that it was them.
Yeah, exactly.
Surely. I mean, how hard can that be?
Well, to
set someone up for it and say, no, look, it was this £400.
Yeah, you kind of think it happens all the time, doesn't it? That's the staple of many a film with
political thrillers,
with Harrison Ford in.
No, they can't even do that properly.
Surprise, surprise, they're going to find some collusion at some point, and then they will go, do you know what?
That's why they've changed their story.
Yeah.
Because they've been very consistent about there being no collusion. The only reason to suddenly start saying, even if there was collusion, it's not against the law, is because you know that evidence of collusion is coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
Probably from Cohen, to be honest, because he is, it seems, singing like a canary.
Exactly. exactly, yeah.
And now Giuliani's changed his tune on Cohen as well, because two months ago, he was saying what an honourable, honest lawyer Cohen was.
Right.
And and how he, you know, absolutely trusted him. And he hopes he does talk to the FBI because he will tell them that nothing was going on.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, oh, Cohen's a liar. He's always been a liar. He's a pathological liar. I knew this was going to happen because he just lies all the time. He's been lying for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever is useful at the moment, at that particular time, ignore everything else.
Well, that's...
And I think that's what it is that Trump lives in just a very short parcel of time.
Yeah.
He doesn't think about the past or the future. He just thinks, what is important right now?
Yeah.
I need to say right now to get out of this situation.
Yes, exactly, yes. What can I get away with right now? You know, he's standing there with a hammer in his hand by the broken window and, you know, like Bart Simpson, and he just says, no, it wasn't me.
Yeah. You can't prove it was me.
No, can't prove it. And even if you could, it's not a crime. So, but whilst he's surreptitiously dropping the hammer and backing away, which is why he has no idea of how long things have been going on, like Obamacare been going on since the turn of the
17
century.
Years.
Yeah, and the past is coming up to get me. What is the past? It's nothing to do with me. Different guy. Wasn't me.
Just like Shaggy.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Trump threatened to shut down the government if Democrats refuse to fund his wall, forgetting three important things. The Republicans have control of the House. The midterms are in 3 months, and people don't like it when the government shuts down.
And Trump tweeted last week, I'm looking into 3D plastic guns being sold to the public. Already spoke to the NRA. Doesn't seem to make much sense. Which is odd, since it was his administration that allowed the instructions for untraceable homemade 3D printed guns to be published online.
Trump said at a speech in Kansas City, the party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command. Oh, no, wait. That was from the novel 1984. What Trump actually said was, just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening. So, basically the same.
Just when you thought, Big Donald, just when you thought 2018 couldn't get any weirder, it turns out the Republican candidate in Virginia's 5th Congressional District, who is brilliantly named Denver Riggleman, is a self-published author of Bigfoot Erotica. He claims his interest in Bigfoot is entirely non-sexual. The title of his next book, The Mating Habits of Bigfoot and Why Women Want Him, says otherwise. The inference there is that he's already written several other books.
He's written a book about Bigfoot hunters, like a non-fiction thing.
Yeah.
And that's where he claims his interest lies,
is
in how crazy these people are that they think Bigfoot's real.
Yeah.
And his Instagram has a number of drawings of Bigfoot with enormous penises.
Bigfoot by name.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say about big feet.
Expensive shoes.
Trump announced a $12 billion bailout for the farmers he screwed with his trade war. He really loves fixing problems he created and acting like a hero. He's like Muttley from the Wacky Races begging for a medal.
Medal. Give me. The guy who took a pickaxe to Trump's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame has been bailed out by the guy who destroyed it in 2016. Is it just me, or could this be the beginning of a chain? You know, pay it forward.
Someone set Betsy DeVos's $40 million yacht adrift, doing $10,000 worth of damage. In other news, a bird crapped on my car, which proportionally is just as bad.
Exactly. The Trump administration still doesn't have anyone in charge of preventing foreign election interference. And the Republicans just blocked an effort to allocate $250 million to increase election security measures ahead of the midterms. I guess when your strategy is so obvious, why waste the money?
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. If you hear Trump say something stupid and wonder if it's a fallacy, email us on fallacioustrump@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @fallacioustrump.
And if you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you had a good time, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you can now buy Jim's book, upon which this show is based, Fallacious Trump, available online on Jeff Bezos' little mail order startup. It's well researched, brilliantly written, and perfectly encapsulates the absurdity of Trump and the wryly observant humour of Jim.
Oh, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
You can support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/ftrump, where you can get early access to extended episodes, exclusive bonus content, and other cool stuff.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.